Welcome to 51 First Dates.
I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy.
And we are doing an experiment.
And talking about dating.
And love. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Cheers.
Cheers. Hi, everybody. I'm Liza.
And I'm Kimmy. And welcome to 51 First Dates. We are a podcast designed to make you feel better about dating or not dating. Or anything. We're also not really designed. We just speak on a microphone. We are two ladies on the mic. Welcome back, Liza. It's so good to see
Hi,
you.
Hi, guys. What is happening? Kimmy and I, as usual, just like talked for a very long time before we started recording. I'm in my bathrobe.
Whoops.
It's freezing. You know, happy Friday.
Happy Friday. And it's a good Friday. It is. Not the Good Friday, but a Good Friday. Oh, boy. It's going to be a good one. It's solo Liza and Kimmy today. If you're new here, we often have very cool guests on or our dater on. You can go back to the beginning and listen if you want to hear the OG, like a date a week format this podcast used to have. If you're cool with just chatting about dating, these are the things we're going to chat about today. We are kind of both in very busy seasons of our lives. So we're going to have kind of like a series of solo eps for a bit and then get the gang back together again. And by gang, I mean definitely Carlin sooner than later, but also some cool experts. So let us know who you want to have on. Okay, but today it's fun. Today we're talking about getting over that person. Everyone has that person, I feel.
Oh, yes. I am very, very bad at getting over people, like historically bad at getting over people. So I'm very excited to talk about this and also maybe have you explain to me how to do it because it's not a skill of mine.
Yeah, there's a section on our little agenda where it's like, we will give advice. But I feel like it's more like we will give experiences and yes. You will know not to do what we did.
Oh, oops. Yes.
Speaking of our agenda, this is what we're going to talk about today. We will start with Consumption Corner as per usual. And then we must touch on West Elm Caleb because we must. And if you don't know what we're talking about, we will let you know. Yes, the grandmas will let you know about the latest TikTok dating drama. Then we will do some rapid fire pep talk questions. Also a staple as of like 2 months ago. And then we're going to talk about how to get over that person. And by that person, we don't just mean like your ex in that big like way, you know, from college or something. We mean just that person who you can't get over. And sometimes it's after a very short period of time, 3 to 6 months, less sometimes. And then we're going to do a grandma dating vocab lesson, really going after both of us for our age today. Sorry. we're going to talk about some new dating vocabulary words that have come up of late, hardballing, oystering. We're going to learn in real time what these things mean. And,
oh, my God. When I saw that on our outline, I thought it said hardboiling. And I was like trying to guess. I was like, oh, it's when you put someone in, I don't know, hot water. So, like, I was truly trying to guess what that was going to mean based on the word hard boiling.
It feels like hard boiling is what's happening with West Elm Caleb. Like people felt hard boiled by him, but now he's being truly boiled in hot, hot water.
Yeah.
And it's kind of problematic, but also we'll talk about it. Okay. We're excited. Thank you for being here. 51firstdates@gmail.com. If you want to send us a question, a comment, a concern, a worst first date, whatever you want to share with us, we are happy to hear it.
And you can also follow us on Instagram at 51firstdatespod. You can reach out to us there and we will get back to you. And you can also rate, subscribe, and review. It helps us a lot. And we love you for it.
All right.
What else? Liza, consumption?
What are you consuming?
Okay. So I consumed something that I like was pretty sure I wasn't going to consume, which is the second season of Cheer.
Ooh.
I really liked the first season. And then the second season, I feel like I got the sense that it was a lot about how it was for them getting famous, which like does not interest me. Like I don't like when docuseries do that, like reflect on what it meant to be in a docuseries. And a lot of it is that, and I don't like that part. Like, I didn't love this season or hard recommend it, But I am just obsessed with the like athleticism of these kids. Like, that's the thing that I keep going back to, is I'm just like, oh my God, the things they can do physically is so crazy. And they focused a little bit more on Trinity Valley Community College, which is like the rival of Navarro, which the first season was mostly about. And that's been really fun because it's not about like, I'm on Dancing with the Stars now, which the cheer coach was. But, you know, it's not like my favorite season ever, but holy shit, I really enjoy watching cheerleaders do their thing because they're such fucking incredible athletes. And like, my mind is blown. I wish I could, I can't do a cartwheel. So watching these kids like just fly through the air is so mind blowing to me.
It is mind blowing. It's very, I remember as you're speaking about it, I haven't seen season two, watching season one in like true horror as well as awe. Like, please don't hurt yourself. It's like part scary thriller documentary. I don't know. Oh, do they touch on the darkness of, okay. I feel like they had to. Yeah.
Yeah. They did an episode about Jerry and it was, I mean, I'm not sure how everyone's responding to it. I thought it was well done in that, like, it really highlighted that, like, you do not know someone, you know, you loving them on TV or being a fan of them. You know, they interviewed two of his victims. And
I think that's probably the right thing to do. Sorry,
yeah. And these kids, I mean, they're still kids. It's a set of twin brothers. And they were so brave and so like well-spoken. They also interviewed their mother. And I was like, this is a family of like very smart people. They were just incredibly thoughtful about why they felt it was important to come forward, why they felt it was important to be interviewed and to show their faces and to destigmatize. And it was really powerful. But yeah, I think that was just such a huge thing they focused on, is like, you do not know, you know, people, when we hear that someone we love or care about has done something really bad, and we're like, it's not possible. Like, it is. And
yeah.
So it was, I think it was well done and respectfully done, but, you know, of course, always, always hard to hear, and always hard to hear those stories and like watch those things.
It's on my list.
What about that. You?
Oh, nothing. You know, I will be consuming a lot of movies for work. I have been as well. But separate from that, I continue to be sucked into the Bravo vortex. Just briefly, we'll touch on the fact that Summer House is back. It is so fun to watch. And I would recommend it, even if you've never watched it, watch the first episode of this season. There is a couple, Kyle and Amanda, who are getting married. Just watch the way their first night in the Hamptons goes, and you will be reminded that I shouldn't say much like, because that's such a dark scenario, but the way Liza was just mentioning, you don't ever know anyone, you don't know anyone's relationship, it may bring you a little bit of a comfort that these two people are going to get married, and this is the relationship that they're in. That sounds dark, but it's reality TV, and reality TV can be dark, but it's just a little bit wild that's what an engagement can look like. So just throwing that out there. And Andy Cohen really does not like Kyle and lets it show on Watch What Happens Live, does not give him a pass. And so that was delightful for me to watch. Again, this is all very dark because these are real people, but these are real people who, especially, you know, the Kyle, who not the best behaved, not the best way to treat, you know, the woman you're going to marry on this show. Andy kind of trolled him on Watch What Happens Live, being like, I remember you following Bethany around trying to get on Bravo. Like, so I think, you know, and probably characters are being played up, but I'm just saying, if you're like, everyone's engaged and happy, just, it's such a weird peek behind the curtain of this couple I don't know. So I'm being a little bit of a nasty girl about, but
not at all. I mean, yeah. Look, it's Bravo. Okay. That's the point of Bravo. Andy Cohen gets it. Right. Andy Cohen understands the assignment.
He does. He does.
I've been overusing that phrase. I know it's played out and over, but I just feel like it's really useful.
You know what? We're grandmas with grandma vocab, so it feels about right, Liza.
I'm doing it. I'm doing keeping it. I like it. All right. Should we talk about West Elm, Caleb? I need you to educate me a little bit. I did a light internet research, but I feel like you should be the one to to lay it out.
Yeah, I did a light internet research too. It was – so I am very proud of myself this week. I took – this is so sad. I took Instagram off my home screen. So it's that much harder to find. I have to kind of search for it, and it's really helped. I have found myself phantom, like, reaching for where it is usually located on my home screen so many times. But I was a little bit more offline, of course, checking in once a day this past week. But all of a sudden I was seeing – I was still going on Twitter, so not necessarily healthy – this West Elm Caleb thing going all around. So the first Google I actually did was just West Elm Caleb and saw these articles, and it was like, oh, this is dating related. This guy's going viral on TikTok because of something. And then I saw, like, very – like, on the first page, the SEO brought up LinkedIn, Caleb something West Elm. But then I clicked on the page, and the LinkedIn page was gone. So I was like, oh, wow, this is, must be real. Here's a brief rundown. Basically, a girl who hadn't dated this guy named Caleb, who's tall, handsome, white, lives in New York, works at West Elm. She had made another TikTok that went kind of viral about, you know, a guy who was shitty in dating. And then all these people were like, oh my gosh, is it Caleb who works at West Elm? And she basically was the first one to put together that there's this guy a lot of people have dated in New York. That is now, he's now West Elm Caleb, who is just kind of like a, people are calling him a love bomber. He'll take you on dates and then he ghosts you. But there's, as far as I know, at this moment, there's no like, there's no accusations of like, I'm already getting into some of my feelings about this, but there's no accusations beyond that, right? He's just a guy I've dated a million times in New York that we're very familiar with. So that's turned into like very, very viral. Everyone sharing these experiences or dunking on him. And I feel like very quickly the story went from, oh my gosh, this guy is such a loser, to should we really be dunking on this one guy so hard? And TikTok as a platform and its algorithms can turn people into the main character so quickly. Again, this is not NPR, so we don't need to get into all of that. But basically, a guy was shitty to women in New York and now is like can't have a LinkedIn. I don't want to defend him, but I just have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I feel like it's tricky because, you know, I am anti anyone being shitty to anyone else dating each other, but so many people do it. I feel like this particularly caught on because the term West Elm Caleb, like the fact that he works at West Elm, it yeah. feels like the perfect look. I'm not dragging West Elm. I am sitting on a West Elm chair as we record this podcast, okay? I love West Elm and the West Elm family of products. It does kind of represent a certain douchiness that I myself also represent of like New York, you know, what's it fucking called? Like yupster.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. That's what it is. I literally am sitting in a room full of West Elm furniture. Like, my whole bed set is West Elm. So I'm not.
Big West Elm is listening, Liza, and they're coming for us. Big furniture.
I know, right?
They're coming.
Well, the thing is that I want to, basically, I want to acknowledge that I know I am one of these assholes. But something about West Elm Caleb, like, literally, I heard just the name and, like, lightly what it was, like what he was and why people were mad at him, and I was like, West Elm Caleb, that's perfect. And the name Caleb, everything. But yeah, it's weird. I don't know. I don't want the internet to mistreat one person, but I feel like we all have a West Elm Caleb in our past that we'd like to drag, so a lot of people are dragging this West Elm Caleb instead of confronting yeah. their own personal West Elm Calebs.
Yeah, this is, you know, not that I truly have evolved in all of the ways. I'm still quite immature in many. But me, there are people who I dated who didn't treat me well, and I let myself not be treated well. And I don't think in this case all these women let themselves not be treated well. They were duped, whatever. But I dated shitty guys, and I would have loved if for a day, like, we, like, made fun online videos and things, and you kind of, like, or when this podcast was bigger and you could kind of tell a story about someone anonymously and feel like, oh, got him, you know, even get a text, be like, oh, got me. That felt good. But now I look back on kind of why that felt good. And I would say it's not ideal. Not that these women shouldn't be able to say what they want on the internet. It's fun. It's funny. But like, it just feels a little bit like a Band-Aid solution to something like that could be bothering you at a bigger level. I'm making this far too serious. Like, so
no, I was about to take it one step further and say like, I think it's because we all feel powerless in dating. So the moments we can feel powerful, like behind someone's back or to someone who we haven't dated, but who has exhibited bad behaviors that other people we have dated have also exhibited, it makes it feel like we have control and more power over our dating situations, and we don't. The thing that actually does that is being honest with the people you're actually dating and calling out bad behavior respectfully when you see it, or not respectfully if it's not respectful behavior. I don't know. But, you know, I feel like that's what it is. It's like we don't – this honestly, this lightly ties in with our theme today of getting over that person because, like
– yes.
I think that, like, the inability to say the things you want to say to the person you want to say them to causes a lot of shit in dating. And I feel like we have all latched on to West Elm Caleb as an example of bad behavior because we can't say fuck you to our own personal West Elm Calebs. How many times can I say West Elm Caleb?
Yeah, our own personal West Elm Calebs. Yeah, if this is Watch What Happens Live, that would be our drinking word.
Oh, my God, 100%.
Yeah. And like the larger problem in dating where we kind of feel like as women who date men sometimes probably that there are West Elm Caleb behaviors allowed and we're taught to just kind of make up funny vocab words about it and oop, ghosting, and we have to kind of deal with it. And that does suck. And men can be so poopy. But in a way, like this is just – like the internet's now made this guy go viral and I'm not – yes, there are like dangers to that kind of, you know, having your name out there. It's probably not fun for him. Also, it sounds like it could be fun for him. He gets to be like, I don't want to stop him, Caleb. You made him famous. You're giving him more attention. Like anytime I made these little comments on the podcast or when we would make a little – you know, video piece of content about, and I didn't imbue it with something from my dating life. It wasn't a gotcha moment. It was giving it more energy. And so this Bolu Babalola, who is an author who I follow her on Twitter and love, she captured exactly how I'm feeling perfectly. She said, it's actually insane that we know this much about a random dude in New York City who is maybe not a particularly thoughtful dater or whatever. It might feel shitty. And yes, men are the worst, but it isn't worth this much noise, which is like, yeah. Like, again, I'm like on my high horse about this, but literally imagine if it was a woman. Like, I just feel like, what are we doing here for so many reasons? Why give this dude more attention? Like, if he had, like, been going on dates and been, like, worse in a different way, like, had he been racist to a bunch of women, and I don't think that is part of this equation here. Like, maybe then fucking go for it. But it just feels like he's like so many guys out there. And I don't think this is going to teach anybody a lesson. I don't know.
I mean, mostly it's I think it's like funny, mostly.
It is funny.
However, it probably isn't funny for him, which sucks. Like, that's, you know, that's a tough. But it's truly, we're all trying to like, I think, exercise our demons on this guy who didn't, I think, do anything unique.
Yes, he definitely did things that were wrong. Were they unique? No. I guess, yeah.
Like, maybe
know.
We need to go on our TikTok and be like, refind your own West Elm Caleb. Like, instead of dragging actual West Elm Caleb, can we just drag your own
Liza,
personal West
I think
Elm
you,
Caleb from your past.
I think you should do that. I think like, you should do that. I'm proud of you. Guys, Liza's going to do it. I just decided her. No, because I don't need to, like, people who, like, Taylor Lorenz, right, who's a reporter at the New York Times, who covers all the Gen Z stuff, did TikToks being like, that got her a lot of shit, too. Just being like, people don't think about how, like, harmful this can be when people blow up, you know. She was basically, like, not defending his behavior, but defending anyone against, I don't know, not becoming the main character on Twitter or TikTok because it can be scary. But yeah. I don't need to get that serious about it. But it just, something to me just feels fun. Like I just feel like a grandma. I feel like a full grandma. Theme of the day. I'm like, no. That's actually not doing what you think is doing. It's funny. It's funny because of West Elm. If there wasn't West Elm, this would just be like weird, mean girls. But I guess it must be a lot of women, to be fair, have this many. Unless people are lying. Okay. We don't have to go there. Anyway, Liza, I like that.
Find your own West Elm Caleb. Or remind yourself
drag
of
him
who that is.
Or, drag or him. Her, but it's probably him. Drag him.
Yeah.
Probably. All right. Should we do some rapid fire pep talk?
Let's do it.
Okay. First one. So many friends and relationships. How to handle.
Be your bad self. But truly, it can be tricky when all your friends are in relationships and people are not always sensitive to that, like going away for a weekend. Like, I don't know, Liza and I were just talking about weddings. So just kind of being like, the couples can afford this, you know, splitting houses with people. Just, it can be tricky and awkward and unfun, but you have to ground yourself in, one, these people's relationships might be shitty, like on Summer House. No. One, that you could very well be happier than someone in a relationship, and you could very well be happier than you'd be in a future relationship or a previous relationship. I think if we can get out of our own way and stop like equating like fitting in, or like I'm to fit in with my coupled friends, I have to be in a relationship. It's part, one part is within you, and the other part is like logistics and like getting your friends to fucking hang out on you without the we of it all, without their other friend. I don't know, Liza. That was not helpful.
No, I 100% agree. And I think that I'm going to also say, just practically, because I have been in this position before, and this is something I tried to do I've handled this differently. I've been like annoyed at my friends. I've been this, I've been that. I've tried to like talk it out in therapy. Something that I think actually has helped has been to try to genuinely make friends with your friends, boyfriends, girlfriends, partners, because it is a way to if you can come, and look, obviously we don't get to choose our friends' partners, and we also don't get to choose if we like them, and there are certainly people that my friends have dated who I have liked and respected as humans, but like haven't, you know, like vibed with, and that's a bummer, but you should at least get the chance to know them. I would say like invite yourself to a dinner with them. Be like, hey, let's go to, like, let's the three of us go out to dinner. Like, I just want to hang out and get to know your partner or whatever. Because that also just like expands your social circle. It makes you feel more connected to them. And I think it can make you feel more like you have an extra friend instead of like someone who's taking your friend away. And you can understand their relationship more. And obviously, sometimes this doesn't work. Like, if their partner sucks, or if you find them to be annoying for, you know, like just the reasons that sometimes we don't like people, that is not because they suck, but just because we don't like them. But give it the chance, because I've made some really good friends that way, and now have like individual relationships with some of my friends' partners that I really love and value, and like could easily like kick it, get a beer with many of them. And it makes it all feel more like an expanding group of friends rather than someone taking your friend away from you. I'm putting air quotes around it.
I think that's amazing advice. And you know how not to handle it? This is just popping in my brain, because this is what I would do when I was like seventh wheel. Don't say seventh wheel or third, fourth wheel. Like, fuck that noise. Like, no one's actually thinking about it that way. Now that I have been on the other end of that situation, no one is ever thinking about that. They're like, these are my friends that are here. Like, I do not think about my friends who are not in, like, even if it's one friend and two couples, let's say I'm out with a couple and one more of my friends, I am not thinking of them as other. I'm thinking about five people at a dinner. I know it's easier said if you're in the couple, but like every time I used to say, oh, I'm the seventh wheel, it was out of my own insecurity. And again, I wasn't actually that unhappy with being single. I wasn't necessarily at a table with people whose relationships I wanted. So let's not do that anymore.
100%.
Fuck that. Okay.
Bury that.
I'm going to go down one, Liza. Mm-hmm. How to know if it's they are your person, the one.
Wow. This is a big question. We need to do a full episode on that.
Yeah.
We'll do a full episode on that. It's a great topic. Here's my quick thing. You just gotta wait till you know. No, that's a lie. You have to feel like you can be totally yourself without judgment. That's a huge thing. Like, if you find yourself regularly changing your behavior or feeling like you don't want to show a side of yourself, if you think you're going to be too silly, too goofy, too gross, too whatever, like, that's a lie. You could feel like that, but then you have to try to be that and see if you get judged for it or if you get accepted for it. And if your partner has to get a kick out of every part of your personality, that's a Sarah Winterism. Like, do they get a kick out of you? And you've got to show them all sides of yourself and not be judged for it. And other than that, I think there is just like a time element. I don't really believe in the like big spark you just know. Although I think that something we've heard over and over and over and over again from daters on this podcast who have found long-term partners that they really love and feel safe with and connected to is that there's like all of a sudden a comfort level. Like you're there. It's just different because you feel so comfortable and so yourself with a person. So like that's a big indicator. But then you also have to line up on a lot of other shit, like what you want out of life, your priorities, your ethics. You know, there's like so many things. So I also think like also give it time. There's no replacement for time and really looking to that person to show you over and over and over again that they are who you suspect and hope they are.
I beautifully said, and it kind of goes, I like the next question in relation to that, how to shake first date nerves, like literal shakes before date. I feel like I'm sometimes putting on a persona on first dates, agreeing with or saying things that aren't totally me. I feel like to your point about the biggest difference I noticed in feeling like, you know, I would say like Tony's my person is that I could actually be myself. And now I can be my very truly weirdest self that is sometimes questionable. But I think just stop. The shakes we can do second. Like feeling like you're agreeing with things, you're saying things even slightly off the mark or like tamping down a part of your personality. Like you don't have to get into a debate about the filibuster on your first date. But, you know, if you're finding yourself kind of like putting on that little baby persona, that's just kind of like, yeah, I like sports or that's out of a rom-com from the 90s, women pretending to like sports. Women like sports. But I would do this with small things or bands or pretend I saw a movie that I didn't. Just like, don't. And it's early and it's a first date. You'll save yourself time. We say that all the time. Easier said than done. But don't let the nerves become that weird, like, yes, sir, yes, ma'am kind of vibe, because better to find out if you're a fit early or not. And you're going to have to become yourself. Otherwise, you'll go literally insane, right? This is not Mrs. Maisel. We're not like putting on makeup before our partner wakes up in the morning. You're going to be your whole disgusting, poopy, farty self. So don't do that on the first date probably, but you know, if that's your vibe, that's your vibe. I would say just cut yourself off when you feel yourself doing it.
Yeah. 100%.
What about the first date, like nerves, Liza?
Oh man. Okay. So I would say have less caffeine on that day. This is something yeah. I am working on. It's like, oh, if I'm literally shaking all the time, maybe less caffeine would help. So I also think that, you know, look, everyone's going to roll their eyes. Therapy. Like, I think you have to think about why you're getting nervous and why this particular question says, feel like I'm putting on a persona on some first dates, agreeing with or saying things that aren't totally me. Kimmy just addressed that. But, like, that was a huge thing for me. I felt like I slightly changed my personality to adapt to anyone I was around for a very long time. And I certainly had more friends and more people liked me. And I, you know, like I was probably more likable to the outside world, but I was very unhappy. And the only way I figured out stuff like that was therapy. So even if you are in a place where you can't afford therapy, I think that like doing a why tree is helpful, which is like where you write down like, why do I feel nervous before a first date? And then answer that and then say why, you know, say, because I'm worried they're not going to like me. Why am I worried they're not going to like me? Because someone else didn't like me. why do I care that that, you know, just keep asking why. And I think the magic number is like 7 or something. Like, keep really drilling down. That's a lot of what therapy is like someone challenging you on why around a lot of assumptions you have about yourself or other people. So you can do some of that work for yourself. It's very helpful to have a therapist. Highly recommend going to therapy. But if you're in a place where you can't, that's a good place to start.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Other tangible things that I have not succeeded at, you know, like meditation, do a small breathing exercise right before. The thing is about first aid nerves. It's like, if you were an athlete, sports games, actor, audition, plebeian, you know, like us, interview, the nerves are there for a reason, and they're not ever not going to be there. It would be kind of weird. Maybe you took a beta blocker if you had, excuse me, I'm joking. If you had no nerves at all, I think that would be, you know, very unattainable, or feels unattainable and would be very odd. So I derive some comfort in thinking before something I get really nervous. Like, they're there for a reason. It's a little cheesy. They're feeding me, like, their energy. That means I'm also maybe a little excited. I don't know. Liza, I just noticed my card has been full, but we're recording on Zoom, so you probably have heard my audio. Real cool. Really strong performance from Kimmy this morning. But shall we take a break and come back with how to get over that person?
Let's do it.
Our vocab.
All right, we're back, and hopefully my sound is fixed / working. I'm acting like the recorder. Let's start over. Okay, we're back, and hopefully I sound good. Okay, so now we're going to talk about getting over that person. Boy, so, Liza.
It's not good.
It's so effing hard. But here's the hopeful part that I need to remind myself. I need to remind you, Liza, and everyone. There are things you can look back on that you never thought you'd get over that you did get over. So that is the hopeful silver lining to it all. But how
literally,
do you
– like, you will get over it at some point. That is my
– You will. I mean –
that's also part of my pep talk is that, like, similar to what I was saying earlier about knowing – how someone is the one, like, you also will it, like, it just takes time. Like, I think this is a huge thing, is like, you can't necessarily speed up the process. I mean, there are, I think, little things you can do to speed up the process, but I feel like for me, a big part of getting over people has been being hard on myself for not being over them yet and being like, what the fuck is wrong with me, why the fuck am I not over this person, blah blah, blah. And like, It just takes some time. Like, it, and like, all of us wish it were like a light switch, but it's not.
Yeah. And before we dive further into our experiences, it's interesting what you just said about being hard on yourself, because I feel like inevitably you're going to have a period of that when you're unable to get out of this. And for me, that often looked like, you know, coming to Liza or a friend and like complaining again and justifying again and doing the same thing. Like, I knew what I was doing, and then I'd be hard on myself for doing it after, like taking up my friend's energy with that stuff. Instead of that, I wish I had been hard on myself in a different way. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to explain what I mean here, but like a little more militant with myself every time I went to text a friend or went to think about them or went to their Instagram. Like, I wish I just kind of, to our earlier point about if you find yourself slipping into other personas on dates, just don't do it. Again, easier said than done. I wish I just didn't do so many things that prolonged my getting over them process. We all know it's going to take time. Time's an easy answer. We can end the podcast now. You want to get over that person, it will take time. But I think there are things you can do in a productive way where you are kind of hard on yourself. You're like, no, you're fucking great. They suck. Unfollow them. Like, be a little bit problematic almost. Like,
yeah,
West Elm Caleb it, because you're not doing it, you know, in a way where someone has to delete their LinkedIn.
100%. I think that, like, to that point, there are ways to, like, wait, do we want to do experiences first, or we want to do advice first? I'm about to get into one of the pieces of advice that helped me get over it.
Let's do experiences first, because everybody is curious for juicy details all the time.
Yes,
I am.
Totally.
At least.
Yeah. Well, I had an ex-boyfriend who I had a good relationship with that, like, I never really thought was going to be a forever relationship. It was very much like an early 20s. He was like my first boyfriend. Really, like, only good things to say about him. But I think that, like, I knew it was, I always felt when we were dating, like, it wasn't, he wasn't the person who I wanted to, like, be with forever. We valued really different things. And I just sort of knew that. And so when we broke up, I was very surprised to find myself having, like, an enormously hard time moving past it. And it was, like, it fucked with me because I was like, I didn't think, like, I always felt that this relationship had an end point and I was the one to initiate the breakup. Why am I, like, so torn up over this? Why am I still thinking about it? Why is he still in my head? Like, and it really deeply fucked with me for, like, a very long time. It led to a lot of, like, very non-productive and passive aggressive and some productive conversations with him because we still were, like, in the same group of friends, saw each other semi-regularly, and that could have been contributing to it, of course, because when you see someone, you're reminded, like, these are the things I like about you, and, you know, like, it's like I'm attracted to you, like, these things that are, you know, you can't really just totally get rid of when you break up with someone. But it was a thing. Like, I was deep in therapy at that point, feeling myself, feeling good, feeling like I understand myself. I got it. Like, I all set here, all of it. And, like, boy, was I wrong. And I think that's part of what threw me about it.
Yeah. It's so challenging in these, no matter what the situation is, to kind of be like, oh, I'm wrong. Like, I am not actually in control of my feelings the way I think that I am. And so when I think I can go back and have that conversation or reach out to that person and be the cool, chill friend or girl, not that I'm now talking about myself as humans do, but it's really hard to be confronted with, like, oh, I'm not where I thought I was. And that's not – it's uncomfortable to feel that way. Like, you don't
– yeah.
You feel a little out of touch with yourself, which is spooky.
Totally. Yeah, it's a very – it really, like, throws you for a loop. And I think that it's worse when you are the person who gets broken up with because you also feel like that wasn't your choice. But, again, having been on both sides of these things, like, that means that they weren't – something I think I always came back to was, like, I know this is not the right partner for me. And if you're broken up with, even if you were sure that was the right partner, the fact that they didn't agree means it wasn't the right partner. And I still, even with this, in this relationship I'm talking about that I had a hard time getting past, I still know that, like, we were not the right partners for each other. I was not what he wanted or needed. Like, it was, and that I did have to, like, it did take me some time to communicate that to him, but we weren't right for each other. And he's getting married to someone else. I'm getting married to someone else. Everything is okay. But at the time, it was very painful for both of us. This is, like, a long time ago, which is why I feel comfortable talking about it, like, in these kind of details. And also, I do not think you will ever listen to this. I'm sorry if you are. But, you know, it was, like, the biggest... I think that, like, ego and pride also comes into this a lot. And that's basically what I'm trying to get at with, like, knowing that, like, if you are breaking up, you guys are not the right partners for each other for some reason. Because if one person feels that way, it's not right. And you don't want to be in a partnership that's right. Not right for either person.
Yeah. It's almost like that thing people say. This is a bit of a tangent, but I've been thinking about, like, because I have so much anxiety about, I don't know, trust and loyalty, not as a reflection of who I am with, but we talked about it before on this podcast. Just my biggest fear is, like, the cheating, like, hearing about these horrible things that happen to people we know after thinking the couple is great. And it's just, I have so much fear around that. And a lot of times you hear from people, like, you can't control if your partner is going to cheat. There's nothing you can actually do to stop it. Just the way you kind of can't control if one person in a relationship feels like it's a forever fit or not. Like, and just ego plays into both of those scenarios. Like, it's very hard for me to wrap my brain around not having any control over either of those things. But I really think that I'm speaking to myself. Once I or any of us gets closer to accepting that lack of control, like, there's just a lot more clarity around, you know, what you're actually worried about. Maybe it's nothing. Or what you are actually worried about, maybe it's something where you're not feeling it. You don't want to spend your life with this person. You're just going through the motions because of whatever pressure exists, because there are a lot of them. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Bury that. Here's a thing. Okay, so I want to talk about, like, some light advice, but this is basically based on things that I did, and I'm telling you to do the opposite. I feel like it's really super duper easy to only remember the good times and the good things about someone. This is something that I have been so massively guilty about. It's like, you think about the good sex, you think about the fun you guys had, you think about, like, the laughing, you think about the, like, going out and getting drunk, whatever. These are clearly personal examples. And you don't think about the things that didn't work, or the things that you wish you could have changed about the relationship, or the things you tried to change about the relationship. So this is something I did that I would actually recommend. I, at one point, thinking fondly upon this ex, like, went back to the beginning of our text thread and was, like, reading our text thread, thinking it would make me, like, I wanted to, like, feel the way I felt. Like, I was trying to, like, come up with a reason to get back together or something. I don't know. It was the impulse to do it was that I missed him. As I was reading through it, I was like, oh, I forgot all these things that didn't work about our relationship, like communication issues we had. Things, again, this is, like, a good person who I don't want to drag on the internet, but we just, again, weren't right for each other. And a lot of that played out in the way we communicated and the way we, you know, talked about things that, like, I didn't feel comfortable being totally myself and open and sharing my emotions and, like, sharing my inner self with him, which was as big a flaw of mine. It wasn't necessarily about him. But in reading through that text thread, I just remembered that feeling of being in a relationship that wasn't right, where I didn't feel like I could totally be myself. And that actually, like, reading back in that text thread was a huge moment that made me remember that. So this might not work for everybody, but basically what I'm getting at is, like, if you find yourself spending a lot of time thinking about the things you miss about the relationship, I would just say challenge yourself to spend equal time thinking about the things you don't miss. Because it is so easy. Like, there are psychological studies around, like, the, you know, rose-colored glasses around the past. And, you know, we all have this tendency as humans. So I think it's really important to challenge yourself to be like, okay, I thought of, like, four things I missed about them. I'm going to think of four things I do not miss. Even if it's just, like, something you love about your new single life, like not having to negotiate about what TV show to watch.
That's a really good point. Yeah, the slippery slope of looking back at texts, probably if it didn't work out, you're going to see, especially more recently, texts that are pretty upsetting. I'm feeling the cringe of specifically looking back on the texts of my person that took me forever to get over. I think, Liza, mine is my West Elm Caleb.
Yeah, totally.
It wasn't as aggressive, but almost more difficult in that sense. It wasn't like a love bomb ghost situation, but you've definitely heard me talk about this person on this podcast before. I, after a stint of, like, having a hard time in dating, like, our actor friends and just not really knowing what to do, having friends have much more, like, lively dating lives than me, kind of, I am trying to think about the place I was in when I met my West Elm Caleb. What can we call him? I don't want to be revealing. I'm trying to think of the nickname. But I think Ivy I was in a
League.
Place.
It, like, Ivy League Ivan?
Ivy League Ivan.
Is that too much?
Yeah. I was in a place where, also we've talked about this on the podcast, just like life things, and my mom was, you know, sick, and I don't know, dating and me were a very weird relationship, but I met someone, like went on a first date super randomly. I think this is my second Tinder date ever, or third or something, really, really early. And had just like a great fun night with a really smart guy who was going away to an Ivy League grad school in 8 months or 9 months. And so, of course, that was very appealing to me and checked a lot of boxes, but also felt attracted to. I don't know. I think I just hadn't been dating guys like that since like college. And it was really, really appealing to me for some shallow reasons, certainly, too. We've talked about my issues around the sailboat pictures and the cringe. But then we, it felt so strong, you know. Though, looking back, it was so early on that I would, like, go on Tinder and see if he had been active, and he hadn't been active for weeks, and I just felt so good about, like, normal progression. And it's, like, this is so embarrassing to talk about. Like, the cringe, the ego of it all. I'm like, oh, my God, when I actually look back, it was, like, two-month mark, things weren't going at all how they should have been going for it to turn into anything. Liza, this is so painful to think about because I was so silly. Like, I just wasn't prioritizing how I should feel. It felt like
this is a process everyone goes through. This is what I mean. It's like, don't be hard on yourself. Everyone has to have that process. Like, that's, I think, why people are coming to this podcast and listening to it. It's because, like, we all have, like I said earlier, we all have our West Elm Caleb. We all do.
Yep. And it felt really clear that it wasn't going to grow, but it was still fun, and there was a summer, and someone was moving, so I could justify it all the way. And then it continued even after the move, and it continued for me. It did not continue together at all until he got into a relationship, and it was a serious one, and I think a forever one. I don't know, because one of the best tips I have for getting over someone is to unfollow them. Or me.
Oh my God.
I don't think you have to block. In my case, I had to unfollow, though. That changed the game for me. But basically, this is to say, my like situationship, which again, have definitely talked about on other episodes, went on for fucking years. But the latter half of those like 2 years, or just me being unable to get over it, thinking about what I did wrong, like self-flagellating, like being so hard on myself. And then that being hard on myself turned into like a drunken message to kind of just like get that attention hit that I wanted. Like, truly, I sent the most embarrassing drunk texts a person could send. And shout out to this person for never being a monster or mean about them. But I think the thing that I couldn't do for myself that I almost wish this person did for me was like just cut it off more seriously sooner. And I think that is my biggest advice, because you can't always wait for the person to start dating someone, right? I forget how I found out, but I know it was traumatic and I was out. I think whatever. It's like you need to ask the question, like, we always say don't ask the question, but tell the person what you want and ask if they feel the same, or, you know, if it's pretty clear it's not that at all and you don't even want to have that question. You can't always wait for them to get into a relationship and have it on social media in front of your face. And even then it's hard. That doesn't even always make it go away. I had to just stop communication. And the easiest way to have that person, like, leave my mind was unfollowing them, which was so triggering to see a post of them having a happy life. Like, not that I didn't want that for them. It just felt like, oh, my God, I could have been there.
The biggest thing is that this is how we feel about all social media and all of Instagram, and why I'm like a grumpy grandma about social media, is that photos are a lie. Like, as much as I would say look back in your old text thread, do not look back at your old photos, because you always look happy in photos. You're smiling, you're posing, you're doing something. Like, photos will continue the narrative of like everything good you're missing, whereas I think communications will remind you of the actual reality of what the relationship was. So, like, in general, I would say maybe don't delete them from your phone if you don't want to, but put them in a hidden album so that they don't show up on like your recommended, so that they don't, you know, you're not like scrolling through your photos looking for something you want to show a friend and you cruise by a photo of them. Like, just put them in a different place. And don't look at them for a while. And certainly, like, don't catch yourself, you know, looking at them and reminiscing fondly, because they tell a very incomplete story. So, Kimmy, what did help when you, like, when you actually started moving on? What were the things that really did it for you?
So, yeah, it's unfollowing. But to be fair to myself, I wasn't always the person reaching back out, even though I was the only one with feelings left. There was some, like, I want to be a good guy, so I'll reach out in a friendly way. We can be friends. All that stuff we've all encountered. And I think what helped there was just setting some boundaries around, like, responding. Definitely not responding while tipsy. Definitely not responding at all at a point. I don't think that's how anything ended, but, like, truly setting a boundary for myself there. And then aside from setting boundaries around social media or this person, the other thing that helped me, of course, therapy, we don't have to go there all the way, was just a lot of rethinking kind of what I wanted my life to look like, which also kind of had to do with my career and everything, but just starting to be a little bit more proactive, not just about going on dates, but like, we started this podcast. Like, you don't have to start a podcast. I challenge myself to go on dates. I challenge myself to, you know, just do the thing, apply to grad school. Started to just do things for myself. So I think that can look a lot like a lot of different things, but like really take control after not feeling like I had control for my specific scenario. That was really helpful. I think, like, Liza, what you went through, it wouldn't have been great for you to throw yourself into a bunch of dates at once, probably. You know, like, that wouldn't have been ideal.
Sure. But also, I kind of, like, had a little, you know, like, sex rumspringa, which I think was helpful. Yeah. And sometimes was it. Sometimes it ended up with me just feeling bad about myself, which is, again, therapy. But I think it's about making sure your life feels full and rich. So if you're the type of, without the person you're missing. So if you're the type of person who likes to do a project, fucking start a podcast. If you're the type of person who likes hobbies, take up rock climbing or, you know, just like add something to your plate, because relationships also take up a lot of time and mental space and emotional space. So you will have free time and free brain space you didn't have before. And I feel like you will look, you know, subconsciously you'll feel like something's missing. And I don't think, a lot of times I don't think it's actually the person. I think it's the time and space you are giving to the person is looking to be filled by something else. So it doesn't have to be dating. It can be dating. If you want to try to go on like a date a week or whatever it is, definitely do that. But it also can be anything else that you feel enriches your life. And I think that finding something that is like positive, even if it's just like, I know this is basic, but like a new workout type, a new whatever, just something new to give your mind something else to focus on. And to give it like to create new like neuronal connections that don't have anything to do with this person you're trying to get over, I think is like a really positive way to deal with that.
That is it, Liza. It's something new. It was something new to focus energy on. And I hate that society made me feel like I needed to date in some ways. But I also, that was something it was more the project, to be quite honest.
Yeah. And you're a project person. Like, starting the podcast makes perfect sense for you because you're a project person. You're like, I have an idea and I want to do it, which is like, everyone has that different part of their personality, except for maybe me. I'm a, like, I have a new friend who I want to have them get me into something cool type of person. But truly, everyone has a thing that, like, lights them up or that motivates them. And whatever that is for you, give it a little newness. Give it a little, if it's a campfire, give it a little kindling or something.
Mm, I love that. I love that very much. And just take care of yourself and remind yourself it'll be okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
That's my last thing. I know we touched on this, but like, I want to get better about looking at like the darkest moments in my life. And even like losing my mom, you didn't I mean, I'll never get over that. But just like you've survived things, like just remind yourself that this too shall pass. It's so fucking simple and sounds really cheesy, but it's really easy to forget.
Yeah. And there's a lot of evidence that our brain goes through like high growth periods after the hardest events. We as humans are adaptable, and when we go through something tough, a lot of systems that we don't even know are working to help us move forward. And also sometimes that means like lying in bed for every moment you can for like a month, which I've also certainly done. When you get out of bed, give yourself a little something new, cook something new, do something, you know, it doesn't have to be like a fancy big thing. It can just be little things, but newness, I think, helps.
Newness forever. Okay.
So as we wrap it up, should we do our grandma dating vocab lesson before we go?
Yes. Liza, have you read these articles yet?
I haven't, because I thought it would be kind of fun if I guessed and then you told me.
Perfect, because I barely read them. Okay, so let's start with hardballing, not hard boiling.
We not hard boiling, hard boiling, which is I was coming up with all kinds of theories on hard boiling, so I don't have anything on hardballing.
All right, so this is a brand new 2022 dating term. Okay, what do you think hardballing is?
Okay, so is it there's obviously like a sexual path. I'm guessing it's not that.
Yeah, not that.
Okay. My thought is like it's one of it. Okay, so I'm guessing it's kind of like a referring to negotiating, like you're like. So,
yep.
Basically, I'm thinking it means, when you make it like when someone's trying to figure out like a date with you, and you make it really, really hard to like schedule with you, or like you try to make yourself seem really like in demand or whatever, so that they know you're a commodity, and then you're like, oh, I can't do next week, but maybe in 3 weeks I have like a free night.
You started out hot. You got a little cool.
Okay.
So I will tell you now.
Okay, tell me.
Okay. So as defined by Logan Urie, who we have had on this podcast, who is the director of relationship science at Hinge, hardballing is a new dating term that means someone is being clear about their expectations of a relationship, whether you want a serious long-term partnership or a casual fling. Some have called it dating like a CEO. There you go, Liza, negotiation CEO. It's your love life. Why shouldn't you call the shots on what you expect and want from the experience? But if you're not one for cutesy dating terms, you could just call it dating with intention, which is balls. Sorry, the next quote is from Kimmy Seltzer, an LA-based dating strategist and host of the Charisma Quotient podcast.
What a great
name. We need to talk to Kimmy Seltzer. I love Seltzer, and my name is Kimmy.
I feel upbeat just by hearing the name Kimmy Seltzer.
Yeah, I'm jealous of it. Oh, man. Okay. So I think let's give her a quote too. She's telling – this is all in HuffPost. Sorry. We were seeing a lot of transactional dating patterns, like breadcrumbing, ghosting. But a trend can get to be too much. Now that the pendulum is swinging in the opposite direction, no nonsense, no surprises, transparent dating. Hardballing. I just have to sit with this for a minute. I kind of like hard boiling like better.
It's the opposite of what it – it's like the opposite of what it means or something. Because hardball, it's like dating with intention is like straightforward balling or something.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking just because of the CEO and the – the negotiation of it all. In a negotiation, if you were hardballing someone, that's not necessarily like a super transparent negotiation. Transparency and being straightforward go together more. I agree with you, Liza. Even like all these radical transparencies in company cultures, which can get toxic as well.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting to think about like the culture of corporations. This is so nerdy versus like these the way we treat each other in dating, especially early dates when it feels kind of interviewee, like culture fit. Ooh, that's gross of me. How embarrassing to say that out loud, Kimmy. I'm not Kimmy Seltzer. What can I say? But I think that for me, the idea of transparency or dating with intention doesn't go along with like hardballing. I don't know. Not to get too technical here, but I don't, not for me. Not for me.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. What the next one is oystering.
Yeah.
And what's I'm going to guess, and this is probably because I have been thinking about, like, the rose-colored glasses thing, that it's, like, looking for the pearl. Like, basically looking at someone and being like, where's the pearl? But, like, looking too hard for it. It's like, don't oyster me. Like, are you quality or not? You know?
I like it. I'm going to be really honest with everybody here. The article I had about this had a paywall. So now I'm on Yahoo Sports, and I'm learning about dating trends on Yahoo Sports. Oystering is the idea of seeing the world as your oyster after a breakup. This was coined by a dating app. So, but I like it. The term was coined by the dating app Badoo. Eliza, do you remember this dating app?
No.
The one where you could, like, remember, I didn't have a date one week and I matched with, like, I was trying to match with, like, guys in Colorado. It was like a video chat dating app before all of this. I think that's it.
Okay.
Its research found that almost half of single people, 46%, who have recently gone through a breakup feel excited to start dating again. So, interesting. All right. I kind of like, empowering new dating trend. Okay. I like the way you also thought about oystering, though, too, Liza. I don't know. I mean, this is better than, like, the ghosting and the breadcrumbing and all the orbiting kind of terms, for sure, because it feels a bit more exciting in terms of positivity and being happy to be single. But it's also very focused on dating again.
Yeah. I mean, I like both definitions. No, well, their definition is more positive.
That's true. Yeah. But I think yours might be more realistic, personally. I felt like I was, like, oystering in the non-positive sense for a long time while dating, kind of looking for, like, this very precious pearl that, like, I'm not that precious of a pearl. I
yes, you are. We all are.
I also – you know what you should be open to, though? Okay, so – there are these weird, scary-looking crab things in oysters sometimes, too, that can be quite precious.
Yeah,
in
the
cultures.
Little mini – yeah.
Yeah, they're fucking terrifying. But be open to those, too. Everything is unique and special. I would say, though, this, like, whole, like, being positive about dating is what this podcast is about. You know, I'm not saying dating is perfect. I'm not saying you have to do it. But we do like the idea of people, like, just trying to put a positive spin on it because – it's something many of us do, to find a partner. And if we can find ways to look at it in a healthier, positive way, we want to. And that's that. Wow. I really crushed it today, Liza.
Yeah.
What is wrong with me? Okay.
I love it. I love all of you.
Love you.
Be oystery. Find your West Elm Caleb and say what you feel to them respectfully. And go on a date.
Go on a date.